Happening now, we'd like to welcome our viewers from across North America and around the world. This is the EdTech Situation Room, episode 308 for October 25th, 2023. My name is Wes Fryer. I'm coming to you from Matthews, North Carolina, just outside of Charlotte, where I am a middle school STEM teacher, this year teaching web design, computer applications or media literacy, and also computer programming. And joining me as always is the EdTech guru of the North, who apparently is racking up a few frequent flyer miles, or maybe it's just miles on the car. I don't know, but there's a lot of wide open spaces in Big Sky Country, as they say. So welcome, Dr. Jason Neifer.
Good evening, Dr. Fryer. Yeah, so I was, I was off the grid completely. Well, off the grid. I've been off the grid since 92, but I was traveling last week. I had the opportunity to meet in Louisville, which I've been told that I try to add more symbols or syllables in there than are necessary, but Louisville for a meeting with other distance learning folks, which was super great to connect with my people there and chat about the goings on of virtual learning. And then I had a wonderful opportunity to hang out with Montana school administrators and school board members at the Montana Conference for Educational Leadership in Billings, Montana last week. I also spoke to teachers at the teacher conference across town about AI, which I also did with the principals and, or I should say the administrators and school board members. So lots of AI conversation going on here, and still don't have any great answers for this yet, but at least I think we're asking the right questions, which is, I think, really the first step of this process. So I was thankful last week to have the opportunity to take the day off. I should mention, because it's something we do keep track of here, it's snowing in Missoula. So we woke up this morning to cold temperatures and, snowy weather. And, I am, happy to report that, winter is here. I don't know if I'm happy to report, but I'm reporting dutifully that winter is here. But I don't think that this is a weather and Jason's travel podcast. Dr. Fryer, what are we pulling off tonight?
Well, for the 308th time, we are going to talk about the tech news through an educational lens. And tonight we have, as always, got a bunch of articles in our Google Doc, which you can find at edtechsr.com/links. And, oh, good, you've got some AI experiments. I've done some, too. Yes, we're going to talk about AI a little bit. We're going to talk about big tech and social media. We might talk about media literacy, although that could just be called politics dumpster fire related to conspiracies. We may not get to that one. Google, hardware, and then our geeks of the week that we end it with. But you, sir, are doing so much great, research and sharing about AI. I just want to ask you before we jump into articles, how would you generalize the sort of tone is of the conversations that you're having? And has anything, what surprises you now when it comes to AI and conversations with teachers and administrators and other educators?
Well, the first thing that surprises me is there's still a pretty significant percentage of educators that have no idea this is happening. And I think that's understandable, in light of the, kind of broader atmosphere in regards to education. And this is K-12 and higher ed. I think a lot of the problems, the pandemic certainly are weighing on folks, but I would also argue that there was a kind of a lot of UGG around education, well before the pandemic. And some of those problems were exacerbated by the pandemic itself. So that was the one thing I'm surprised about. The second thing I'd say that's really interesting to me is that I do think, teachers get teachers get that this is a big deal, right? And I'm not sure if they really understand what it will do to education, because no one understands what it will do to education yet. And one of the things that I think is just really important right now, and this is what I preach in every presentation I give about this, is that you have to play with it to wrap your brain around it, right? Because I think it's just too easy to dismiss this as another internet or another Google. And I just don't think that, I mean, people are making comparisons with, you know, 1990s era internet and the stunning impact that it had, but it really took, in my mind, almost 15 years for the internet to have a really substantial impact on teaching and learning. And one could argue that in a lot of cases, it didn't have nearly the impact that people expected. And so I think that's a surprising thing that I would note. And the other piece of this is that I do think that the teachers that I'm talking to feel like they want to have good conversations about this, and that I think their focus is in the right place, which is about student learning. And one of the ways that I've been trying to kind of think about and divide up this piece lately is, you know, we need to stop focusing on the product as much as we are the process. Because if we're just focusing on products, it's easy to create products now. It's a no-brainer to create products from scratch. We don't have students do things to create products. We do things. We have them create things in order to build the synapses in a way that allow people to build critical thinking. And so that's something that I'm also thinking quite a bit about too.
Okay. Well, awesome. Well, I'm excited to see that you've got some AI experiments, and I was literally talking to my middle schoolers today about playing with media and playing with AI and, you know, explaining why are we playing with this and doing this and, you know, finding some legal ways that kids under 13, that was being an intermediary. I'll tell about that a little bit, but I'm excited that you're playing with it because I agree 100%. And I think that it's just amazing and stunning things that are truly like, wow, that really changes the game. Those things are happening. And sharing those kind of stories is positive. I think that can help us as we process this. You and I get to process this almost every week. And that is so valuable because it is a lot to try to wrap our heads around.
And I would add one other note to that too, is that, you know, I don't blame folks that want to show off the wonder of these tools, right? Because it really is quite stunning what these tools can do. But I think it's really short-sighted to stop there, right? That, you know, this notion of, you know, the 25 nifty things you can do with AI. I mean, I get that because I too want to show off the cool stuff they can do. In fact, we're going to spend some time tonight showing off cool things that AI can do, concerning things, but cool things that AI can do. But the bottom line for me is that there's just really, there's some fundamental questions that I don't think it's just about education for sure, but educators are going to have to be the one to answer these questions. And no one is going to come in and save us in the short term, right? We have to make these decisions ourselves. And in my mind, I think the other thing that could also very much be true is that there might be a time period here. There's just overwhelming evidence that we can't detect this in a reasonable way. We'll have some articles about that a little bit later tonight. And so we may have an uncomfortable time period where, you know, the best we're going to be able to do is to tell students not to use AI and then give them good reasons why, and understand that some of our students will use it anyways to take shortcuts. It ultimately probably to their detriment, but you know, there's no easy answer here to this. Unlike, you know, a lot of technological evolutions that education has faced in the past.
I don't think there's an easy answer or an answer in that, like, something's going to solve this and then, oh, right, okay, we can go back to normal. Like, that's not
right. Yes.
Going to exactly happen at all. But I do think that your answer of we need to play with the tools and get our heads around these, the tool that I'll share about, you know, later today just says, what is their slogan? It's basically never start from scratch. You know, you can always start from a template. And I will challenge everyone right now. Find ways to get the students, and those could be adults that you're sharing a workshop or a presentation with, or they could be kids, you know, sitting in the desks. Find ways to help those people interact and play with these tools so they're not a forbidden fruit that's never touched. But it's something that they are with their minds, with their ideas, with their curiosity. Because what I found today was I had students, I think, asking better questions and showing their curiosity in deeper ways than I usually have them do in class. And it's because I was challenged. We were using one of these generative tools to make websites. And it was just really, really fascinating because we talked about hallucination and we talked about, you know, fact checking. But it's just, I think the tools raise the bar, raise the floor for everybody in terms of where you can start and begin. But it certainly doesn't. I think people have this misconception that it's a one and done turnkey. Oh, just give me my book report on, you know, the fixer or whatever, and I'm done. And that is not at all what my experience has been. It's very iterative. It's very, back and forth. And there's a potential for a tremendous amount of learning and growth. And arguably that can happen at a higher, you know, cognitive level, a higher Bloom's level, you know, than maybe it did before. So, fantastic. Let's talk about some articles. Do you want to jump? We haven't jumped straight into the AI pool in a while. Do you feel inclined to do that, or do you want to do our typical delay a little bit before?
Let's do this. We have so few non-AI articles, and there's some interesting amusements here that I don't think will take much time to get through. So why don't we just start at the top of the non-AI list and make our way down?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we've had different versions of this one for a while. I saw Susan Bearden share one, I think, yesterday on LinkedIn, which again, I'm getting a lot of good content there that was just Connecticut specific. But this Gizmodo article from 2 days ago on October 23rd, titled 33 States Sue Meta Saying It Knowingly Addicted Kids to Social Media. And I will admit that as we've heard these articles about these lawsuits, and these are state attorneys general, you know, that are drawing these lawsuits, similar to what we were hearing about China and TikTok and things like that in the past few years, it's been hard for me to know, okay, how just political is this in terms of posturing and, legislators wanting to connect with constituents and score some points, but not really change something. But this lawsuit, which follows, it says 2 years of inquiry, you know, is being compared to big tobacco, I guess. Big tobacco, is that what we call it? Landmark decisions that really fundamentally changed the landscape of smoking and nicotine consumption and advertising as well. And so I am happy to see them going up against Meta or Facebook in terms of COPPA. What they're saying, and this is just so abundantly vivid to me every single day teaching middle school students as I do, you know, the dopamine and the chemicals that we're dealing with when it comes to just screens in general, and then you take a specific algorithm that literally is like, it's a supercomputer, as I think what Center for Humane Technology in their Social Dilemma says, it's a supercomputer pointed at your brain. And so when you take that kind of savvy and computational power, even when you just have just a screen, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of chemical reasons why the developing adolescent brain, as well as all of our brains, are highly engaged with this. And so I don't know what the ultimate remedy of this lawsuit is going to be, but the fact that we have, 33 of 50 states in this lawsuit, I don't know. I'm thinking about this a little differently and taking it serious. And it's a 233 page lawsuit. So it accuses Meta of a grand scheme to exploit younger users for profit and says the social media giant deceived the public about the dangers its applications pose to young people. And of course, that is a fundamental thing that the Social Dilemma, 3 years ago or however many years ago that came out, was saying, was that, hey, they know that we've got high suicide rates among teens, especially females, and they're not doing anything about it because it's profitable. So your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I do think that it is enormously problematic to have unchecked social media in our culture. And what I would argue is that This wouldn't be so damning if the research from many of these platforms themselves didn't kind of prove this, right? And, you know, and you mentioned earlier, Wes, that we have kind of talked about this in different ways, shapes, or forms. But, you know, one of the things that has happened is that school districts have sued the social media platforms because their argument is that it has caused a huge resource drain on schools to provide things like mental health services because students just aren't prepared to deal with the crippling impacts of social media from their argument standpoint. And if we didn't have, Meta's own research that says that, and also a lot of other research that's adjacent to the social media platforms, then maybe this would be a more academic argument. But I think there's a real argument to be made that the extraordinary profits that social media companies have pulled out of, you know, like almost everyone else, teen users and adolescent users, is worthy of some legal scrutiny. And so, in absence of regulation, this is what probably needs to happen to create real change. And it may not even be that there's a real monetary prize at the end of this for those that are engaging in the lawsuit. If you can just start a process of regulation, I feel like that would be a positive thing. And then I have a related article to that from Gallup, which is that teens now spend an average of 4.8 hours per day on social media, which I think is just a stunning amount of time to be spent on these platforms. And now that said, Wes and I have talked about this in the past, but putting social media all together in one big umbrella is perhaps a bit short-sighted because there is a lot of valuable content that can be consumed on social media that is educational or entertaining in good and positive ways. So, for example, Gallup is including YouTube and TikTok as social media under this notion. So I'm not saying that there isn't junky stuff on those platforms or what maybe 30 years ago we would have called brain rot, but still there is a something to be said about the fact that there's just an extraordinary amount of use of these tools. And then the other thing that is also true is that adolescents and teens tend to use social media less when parents insert themselves into the conversation, whether it's by hard blocks or it's by conversations with their kids. And I do think that it's pretty important, for parents to insert themselves into the relationship between your kid and social media. And it's a little hard, I think, because, I know, Wes, you've certainly had access to tools with your kids growing up in your house. And, you've literally been an IT director. So, setting up the parental controls on phones is really no big deal. I wish there was more assistance for parents on this. I know you've really spearheaded at the schools you've taught at, bringing in parents and help and educate them on all sorts of technological topics. But, I've never heard of Best Buy offering a parental control a workshop. That seems like something that should be a no-brainer at a public library or at retail stores. But I think that this goes hand in hand with those lawsuits. Your thoughts, sir?
So you're talking about screen time, and I discovered yesterday in the People tab of Canvas, it tracks, time, which I think is by course. Maybe I'm not going to admit this, since obviously this is being not only recorded and transcribed and whatever. I am embarrassed about the number of hours that I have been on Canvas. I'm loving Canvas, but anyway, good grief. It's helpful to see the numbers, right? And I'm glad that the social media companies, we've got the screen time, setting inside iOS, and you can just, and I haven't looked at that in a little while, but yeah, I think there's a personal level to this, and then there's the societal community level or cultural level or whatever. And so I'm not involved now in my current school. We call them parent universities, but those were really good sessions. And it's always hard to get parents to, you know, come up to school during the weekday and everything. Yeah. Honestly, the best thing I thought we did was we did some virtually. And that is such a, you know, and sometimes we didn't do this, but where you can like give them a choice, hey, be online or, you know, come in person. So anyway, we need to do more of that. And if you happen to be in that kind of a role or that potential, you know, that potentially that kind of role, it's really, really important to engage in those conversations and provide resources for folks. Cause I do think they're too few and far between, especially when it comes to the parental issues. So.
Yep. You're here.
All right. What would you like to talk about next, sir?
Oh, well, shall we go to your media literacy article?
Okay. All right. So, do you know Kate Starbird? Have you run across her? She works for the Center, I think, Center for the Informed Public at the University of Washington. That's a group that I was able to, go out and spend, about, you know, 3 or 4 days with this summer. She had shared this article and there's several reasons for this. One of the reasons is that as a media literacy researcher and someone who is studying the ways that social media is being weaponized, conspiracies are particularly rampant in our society, she has become a target of Congress people that are actively in Congress. And so this is a New Yorker article from October 21st. It's called Jim Jordan's Conspiratorial Quest for Power, How the Ohio Republican Built an Insurgent Bid for Speaker on the Lies of Donald Trump. Now, we are not a political show. We don't, you know, go for straight up political articles. Sometimes there are these overlaps that we have with politics. And I think that this is an important one. You know, we really need to be talking about media literacy. And I really hope that we can avoid, you know, media literacy becoming polarizing and politicized in the same way. In some cases, I mean, Wikipedia has, we talk about censorship, actual censorship, which social media platforms have to do, right? You have to have content moderation and policies or your platform just turns into, you know, X basically. No, it turns into a sewer or, I mean, and X is not yet as bad as 4chan and some other things have done, but, you know, I've gotten through most of this article and we're about to start our conspiracies and culture wars. Well, we call it Fruit Loop conspiracy theories, but it's out of this conspiracies and culture wars media literacy inquiry project I've been working on since 2019. And I continue to see more and more about conspiracies, whether it's, you know, natural disasters or, you know, fires in Hawaii and Oprah and The Rock and just there's so many places that it's coming up. And so I think that conversations about media literacy, conversations around source validation, we've got, you know, an imminent ground war that is, I mean, from Netanyahu's comments today, I mean, this is happening. We don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know how devastating it's going to be, but you know, it's really, really important that we help cultivate our own skills for filtering and for vetting sources. And then hopefully for avoiding some really outlandish conspiracies. So you may not want to touch this one. And if you just want to move on, that's fine.
Here's the thing I would absolutely say. It is scary to me that people are targeting those that are calling for media literacy. That's very troubling to me because it feels like that puts some of the other broader questions about libraries and access to materials and censorship in a much, much more nuanced light. And so that's the comment that I would absolutely make there. And again, we are not a political show, but I just don't agree with the notion that that somehow teaching kids about being more savvy about what they read or consume is in any way, shape, or form problematic. And only related to that, Stephen King said something pretty funny on Twitter a couple weeks ago. The tweet was something like, by the way, you notice I'm not calling it X in post, but he tweeted that, hey kids, your buddy Steve King, you know, if your school bans a book, you should go to the public library and check out the book to find out why they wanted it banned. Which, you know, is not terrible advice, if you're looking to be a bit rebellious as a youngster. But, yeah, I've never seen media literacy as being political. I've always seen it as being the core of critical thinking in a complex media universe. But I've also learned as of late that it is political for some folks, and I find that troubling.
Yeah, I just really commend this article, and I guess I could go ahead and do a little. Well, I won't do it yet because it's not official. But there's a good chance that I'll be teaching a 6-week course come New Year for a group that I've worked with before that's going to relate to this sifting for media literacy. Conspiracies and culture wars. So it's, we're, as much as we would like to avoid, and I think we rightfully need to, in many contexts, avoid a lot of things that we find in the news and that we find in the media. And I was just listening to a video today that was talking about how important it is for our own mental health with what we're in the midst of. I don't know if I'm losing my, can you still hear me okay?
I can.
Yeah. Okay. It's just, I think I'm having some bandwidth issues, but it's prioritizing my audio. That's kind of weird.
There you go.
He floats back into the screen. I'm coming to you from the ISS today.
Dr. Anyway, Fur is actually a bot. I don't know if you knew that or not, right. But
I've been fully, subsumed by the AI, by ChatGPT. From a mental health standpoint, it's always important to not, you know, completely immerse ourselves in sort of the worst, if it bleeds, it leads news, because that can lead to just some poor mental health. But anyway, I think it's really good to be having conversations about media literacy. And as you point out, it's troubling that academics and folks that are pursuing this are, you know, that fouls are being called when indeed I don't think any fouls have been committed by these academics. I think they're performing some very vital roles for us as a society that need to continue. So
absolutely.
Okay. What's next on the list? We're going down the list, ladies and gentlemen. We've never done this before. We are just going to go down maybe every non-AI article. I think the number is small enough. I think it's
possible. Yeah, that's true. And let's go ahead and group that Google article in with AI since it's basically AI.
Okay.
I do want to talk about this article for a moment from Ars Technica, and they're reporting that Qualcomm, which is a maker of what has traditionally been mobile chips, is working on, that's not the link I was looking for there. That's weird. But, that they're working on releasing chips, for Windows machines that, will be able to provide, Apple Silicon like performance, while decreasing battery life. And that's something that I think is very interesting to me. And I do notice when I go back to Intel, platforms, with, for example, I've got a couple year old, a Lenovo laptop that, it's basically my play around Windows machine that I dig out when I need a Windows platform for something that I like Lenovo machines. I always have. The design, I think, is really great. It's, a sleek and nice looking and a good platform, but they run really hot. The battery's terrible. And, that's just not the case. I now carry around almost exclusively my MacBook, the base model MacBook Air M1 that I purchased just over a year ago, and I absolutely still love it. The battery life is absolutely insane, and I can still get a full day off of it. In fact, last week traveling, I was able to. I still carry around a charger everywhere because I'm that guy, but I have a very finally, collated group of cables that I bring along with me that can get the job done if I need them. But I was able to be in meetings last Monday and Tuesday without having to charge my laptop, except for a top off overnight. Wednesday, I was traveling all day from Louisville to Billings. And I think when I worked on the plane or two of those flights for at least an hour. And, by the time I made it to the hotel on Wednesday afternoon, I think I was down to 81%, which is just really, really incredible considering I probably used that laptop for 5 or 6 hours on Wednesday of last week. So I know there's still a lot of issues with Windows 11 on ARM-based processors. I mean, in fact, I've used Windows 11 on my Mac, my M1 Mac desktop at home, and it was 95% pretty good and decently fast, but also there was compatibility issues with some of the more traditional apps I wanted to use. But I do think if Microsoft wants to keep up here, then, you know, utilizing these ARM-based processors, I think, is a really important part of that process.
You know, it reminds me of your encouragement that had me be a Android phone user for about 9 months. That was when I went to Egypt. That was back in, I think, 2017. And man, I just love that phone that you encouraged me to get. Had such a huge battery.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just took our Chromebook to Egypt, for different reasons. But I hope we're going to continue to see breakthroughs in that area. Because low energy, you know, who knows if biotech's going to do this, but I don't know. We talk about this sometimes. The human brain, you know, arguably the most complex thing we've ever discovered in the universe, and very low energy. And so, you know, hopefully we're going to, there was an article, I don't have it in here, but it was, I don't know if you follow Howard Rheingold, but it was either like on Threads or Twitter, one of the like 7 platforms that I'm on now. But anyway, it was an article that was arguing that we need to be, maybe I need to now put this in since I'm talking about it. I'll go find it. It was a journal article saying that we need to try and attend to how much energy we're consuming. Even with every AI query, you know, supercomputers are literally, you know, burning fossil fuels in most cases. I mean, and some of them might be solar and, you know, or whatever, green. Apple is, I guess, you know, based on their last keynote, they're always talking about that, you know, getting really close to, I think, having a zero carbon footprint. But that is not the case for computing overall. So longer batteries, you know, having a smaller carbon footprint, all of these things are important. But it's not going to cause me to give up my iOS devices, even though I'm giving some love to the Android world. So
it's funny you should say that, because I still obviously own other platforms because I am that guy. But I am primarily now almost exclusively on Apple stuff. And part of it, and I've had this conversation with a couple of friends over the last couple of weeks too, is that the ecosystem makes such a difference there because they all work so well together. That said, I would also say that I am extremely interested in a Chromebook Plus, the new Chromebook platform that has the AI component built into it. And I'm a little annoyed that I have a couple of high-end Chromebooks that have fast i7 processors and 16 gigabytes of RAM that are a generation or two before they're supporting for the Chromebook Plus platform. And I kind of wish that they would reach back a little bit to do that. But that said, yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Can I get an update actually on your Apple speaker? You are a user of, I think, Madam A and the Google Assistant speaker and Apple's, what's Apple's one's called?
Not that we activated. It's a HomePod.
A HomePod, yeah. Yes. Are you're a single HomePod user, or you have more than one HomePod?
No, well, I have one of the HomePod Maxes, the big bulky speaker. And I did that because I wanted a really good experience for my wife, and I had stripped our kitchen down to the studs and invested all the money we should have spent traveling during the pandemic on a new kitchen. And we really wanted something that complemented that very new and fresh space well. And so we did buy one. We waited around for a good sale, and we picked a second generation up. It's a really good quality speaker. I mean, it's loud. It's got decent bass on it. It's got clarity up in the upper volume ranges. It's a really solid speaker. And we've also invested, in these, HomePod minis. This is the one that's sitting next to my desk.
How much does that one run?
Well, that's the thing, is that they're $100 brand new, but I just been keeping an eye on Swappa. And so, I think we've got 3 of them now in the house. I paid $35 for one, and I paid $45 for 2 of them. Now, typically they are $67 used on Swappa, but I just waited until I found cheap ones And I have an alert set so that my phone would tap me on the shoulder every time a new one popped up. So, and that was a good deal because, you know, this one looks absolutely brand new. It's the beautiful blue color. And one of them, like like the outside cover, there was one of the white ones and it had some goobers on the screen. And it did have indeed goobers on the screen. I just, you know, wiped them off with a wipey and then plugged it in. And now it has, you know, the goobers I put on things, in our house. But I like it. The one thing that I don't like is that it's not a Bluetooth speaker. It just works on Apple devices.
And it doesn't run Spotify either, right?
You can send off to Spotify via your phone. It's just not the native integration that, it has on Alexa and, sorry, Madame A and the Google, Play devices. And so, That's the big downfall is that it just, you know, works in that way. And I've also found too that once in a while there's just weird stuff that happens. I have an iPad. A couple weeks ago, I had the iPad, up on my kitchen counter and I was doing dishes and I wanted to watch an episode of a television show. And for some reason, airplayed the sound to our, you know, big speaker, right? And
did you do that intentionally?
Yeah, no, I didn't. So I don't.
What did those balloons just come for? Did you see
I
that?
I have no idea. So
what?
The robots are taking over, Wes.
Oh my gosh.
So
for those of you that are listening to this, a whole bunch of virtual balloons, as if it was Dr. Neifer's birthday on Facebook, just went over the screen. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Squirrel.
Who knows why? I thought you did. And I was like, okay, Wes, I was excited too about this, but.
Is it something we said? Is that a StreamYard feature?
It could be.
you said a magical activation word. Balloons over your picture. I'm sorry.
So watching a show and I try to, you know, cast the audio over to the big HomePod speaker and the audio worked just great, but it wouldn't show the video at the same time. Like it just played it like it was a radio station. And as it turns out, I was on iOS 17, so that's the newest version of iOS, which I like. I've updated all of my devices to iOS 17, but I did do the update to the first kind of bug fix release, and it fixed that. And I've noticed 4 or 5 glitches like that where an update fixed it. That seems a little finicky to me that things can get broken that easily with that. But yeah, it's a good speaker. I don't know if it's worth the money we paid for it, but it's a good speaker.
If you were just going to buy one today, what would you buy?
I would strongly consider buying the HomePod equivalent on the Alexa platform, the Madame A platform, the Amazon platform, because they do have a big a speaker that looks just like it, that's got a lot of bass on it and is a good speaker. I'd probably start there first. But also our entire house, I mean, obviously we have devices other than our iOS devices, but my wife's on an iPhone, I'm on an iPhone, I have an iPad, and it is pretty sweet that I can literally just walk up to the device and put my phone right next to the speaker and I can press a button and it'll start playing there. So that functionality is pretty great.
That's sweet. Well, to preview for folks too, we have been known to do some, the technology shopping cart. Well, we do the EdTech year in review, but I think we've done some gift and product ones. And so maybe in December. And if you're a listener and would like to come on the show, sometimes we'll have had some other guests on in the past. So I will say that I'm sticking with your Anchor recommendations, picked up a Anchor charger that has a couple USB-Cs and a couple USB-As and, anyway, thinking about holidays and things like that and what we might purchase, it is always good to watch for the sales. And I don't know if I think I might have mentioned this, but I got a brand new Apple TV for just a song on Facebook Marketplace. I hope it wasn't stolen, right? I mean, you don't know. You just roll up to somebody's house and hand him a couple bills. But anyway, Facebook Marketplace, Swappa, but just also Target sometimes. I mean, holidays, they'll cut some prices on these things. So just not it's good to know what the regular price is so that you can recognize a sale when you happen to stumble upon it. Yep. Okay. Well, we got about 20 minutes left and we need to talk about some AI stuff. So do you want to take the Google article first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, is it mine?
It's yours.
It is mine. Okay. This is from TechCrunch. And I don't think we talked. Did we talk about the Google's SGE and the integrated search inside?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, at the risk of repeating. So the headline is Google's AI-powered search experience can now generate images and write drafts. And I will say that I am doing this on my personal account. There are, you know, different controls that you'll have on a school account and with students and this is age limited. One of the things that it says is that, you know, they've had some various things generated, some controversial things sometimes. And so anyway, there are some limits on ages. It's supposed to be 18 and older, although it says SGE's recently opened up to teens in the U.S. They're 13 to 17. But you can just write from Google search, say, give me a picture of a red dragon flying over an active volcano. I don't know why that's one that I end up doing. We all kind of have sometimes our thing that we test. But one of my geeks of the week that I'll preview now is a link to that, to Google's SGE. It's a Google lab right now. So it's just labs.google/SGE. And then you get started and you can turn on, what they call generative AI in search. Also, you can turn on SGE while browsing, and then you can turn on code tips, and get coding tips directly within search. So I don't know. I haven't been using it that long. I am literally using a generative AI and AI chatbots, every day. I'm doing things with rubrics. I'm doing things with curriculum. I'll just say this quickly because I may not say it otherwise. I was able to export all of my rubrics. Actually, I exported my entire Canvas course. There's a single XML file that has every rubric that I've created for, I think, 16 different project assignments this semester. I think it has 4,000 lines of code. I threw that as a PDF file into Claude and said, can you please extract the 20 most important student skills from these projects? And I want you to prioritize them according to what citizens need or something. And doggone it if it didn't give me a fantastic list. So powerful tools.
Yeah, really is.
Have you done any Google AI stuff? Are you a Bard?
I have Bard, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this, if we talked about this yet, but I did turn on the Bard experience where I can access all the information in your workspace.
Mm-hmm. But you have to have your own domain, your own workspace for that?
Well, no, you can do it in your private account. I think it's Google AI Labs, maybe?
Well, just bard.google.com will get you to Bard. So I'm going to go in.
Yeah,
and see.
This is something added on. So here, I think you just go to labs.google. Okay. In fact, some of these I haven't even seen before. A supercharged learning in ideation with AI. Have we talked about Google Notebook yet?
I think we've mentioned it. Yeah. Okay. It's not the old Google, notebook.
No,
it's
notebooklm.google.com. And to be honest right now, if I were a college student, I would adopt this tool absolutely right now because it's stunning. And what Google LM Notebook is that you create a notebook, and you upload, up to 10 Google Docs and or PDFs, and the Google Docs can be ongoing ones. So in other words, like your note-taking doc.
Tell me the link again. What is it?
It's notebooklm.google.com.
Notebook.lm. Because if you Google for Google.
Notebooklm, no dot, bit, dot, google.com.
And, actually, notebooklm.google. There's, yeah, no com. Yeah. It's just dot Google. Okay.
Oh, really? That works too then. Okay. So it's a stunning tool because what it allows you to do is, in essence, refer to 10 documents which become the training data for your chat with those documents. So in other words, if you have a PDF of your textbook, if you have your notes in a Google Doc, if you have the syllabus you've uploaded via PDF or other reasons, The assignments maybe from your teacher, it'll refer to all those documents at once. And so the example that I use here is that I have collected in the last 6 weeks or so a lot of, I'm going to call them how-to books, but they're more complex than that. But, you know, learning design books that I use pretty frequently in design. And I'm able, because it can still access its larger, language model here, right? But it trains also on the data that you're providing. It specifically even refers to where in the data it found the information. But you can create a quiz for yourself. You can refer to all that information without having to rely on the memory of the large language model.
And that kind of sort of sandboxed LLM, where you are able to put the focus on the documents that you want, Jessica Jordan, who, no, that's the Flipboard person, Jenny F. Anyway, a user on Mastodon, I don't actually know, mentioned ISTE Stretch AI. Have you heard of this?
No.
So ISTE Stretch, we're just becoming let's share the newest tools with you. ISTE Stretch AI is basically that kind of an LLM. So it's designed for implementing effective ed tech practices with coaches. So it describes itself as a walled garden approach. All the source materials used to generate answers are carefully curated by the ISTE and ASCD team to provide trusted answers. I'll drop that into our chat as well as into our doc. So, you know, the velocity of all this, Jason, maybe you and I should co-write, I bet we could spit this out pretty quick, a playing with media AI version.
That's a good idea.
I think that might actually be an idea, because I'll talk about it, but your Google Doc that you're tracking stuff, I'm following your lead on that, because it's just like there's just so many things that are happening, and to get your head around it, I don't know how else you would possibly do it than playing with it. I don't know. You're not going to be able to sit down and watch 60 minutes episodes or just YouTube videos or whatever.
Well, and then the other thing that, and I don't know what this is called, so I'm not even sure where to refer people to it. But you can now, it's Bard extensions. And so I think you can turn them on in Bard, but you can now access information in your Google email or Google documents with Bard. And so I just gave an example of this. I said, here's what I wanted. What emails did I have from Allison James in 2018? It says accessing your Gmail. You've received the following emails from Allison in 2018. December 19th, Allison asked you if you need to lock in mortgage rates after the Fed raises rates. December 14th, Allison thanks you for Xbox code. There's three more emails about, our refinance of our mortgage. Allison asks you to help her with a couple of gifts from the youth home boys. And we've talked about this a couple of times, but you know, where I think this is interesting is that, I mean, it's cool that it's doing that. And when I ask about most recent emails, it compliments me. So for example, review my recent email traffic, or my recent emails to Allison James. Overall, your emails to Allison are friendly, supportive, and informative. You're clearly interested in her well-being, always willing to help. You are passionate about social justice issues, and you use your emails to educate Allison about important causes. So that's nice that it
it's nice until it's hacked and then the bad actor.
Yeah, totally. But you know, imagine for a moment this hooked up to your to your school email, and you know, please review this morning's emails and tell me which. In fact, let me try that right now. Please.
Well, the hope of having AI fully unleashed to manage the dumpster fire, which some of our email inboxes that we've had for a long time have become. I've been a SaneBox user for probably over 5 years now, and that really is helpful. But this is if this then that meets Gmail. I mean, it's crazy.
Now, here's the problem, right? So, I did put that in. Please review emails today and tell me what I need to pay attention to. Here's some emails you may want to pay attention to. Walmart Photo sent me an email. Katie Porter wants money.
I think it needs a little more training data.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And I think even I mean, it's not that far away from the fact that you are going to be able to use a model like this on top of everything else that you're doing electronically to help you prioritize your day. And that's great, you know, and I think about it from the standpoint of the number of students we have that struggle with ADHD or aren't very organized or are very much novices at, you know, figuring out, you know, how to prioritize things or where to go for help. And I'd love to give a one-on-one human person to each one of those kiddos to help out, but that's just not the reality of the situation. And so, yeah, I absolutely love what these tools can do.
Of course, to find out how to turn on Bard extensions for Gmail, I just went to bard.google.com and asked it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well,
it's wild. It's wild. I mean, you know, it's real wild.
All right. Else would you like to talk about AI wise?
Well, I have a lot of experiments here going on, but and so maybe we'll do one or two of these this week, and I'll just maybe, you know, AI experiments with Jason and Wes will become a regular piece here. But last week I gave, or I did two things on AI. One of them was a presentation, and the other one is to help moderate a conversation about AI with virtual school leaders. And I think I've said this, you know, at least a half dozen times, but I really feel like the best shot we've got is to keep talking about this, right? Like, no one's going to save us. So we have to come up with solutions. The only way to do that is to talk to other people and, you know, build ideas on how to deal with this. But for my presentation last week, I freshened up some of the graphics, and I was going to ask AI, or in this case, it was DALL-E 3, which is the image generator from OpenAI, to create an image of Alfred E. Newman of Mad Magazine days and say, "What me, worry about AI?" So I did that. I asked, and by the way, DALL-E 3, if you are paying for the advanced ChatGPT, is unbelievably good.
That's not one that you do through Discord, is it?
No, that's Midjourney. So this is DALL-E 3, which is the DALL-E 2 wasn't very good in comparison to Midjourney. I think DALL-E 3 blows away Midjourney and just comes as part of ChatGPT 4. So you can just choose DALL-E 3 from the pull down menu, and then it will generate images. It lacks some of the nuance tools that Midjourney has. For example, you can't pick an aspect ratio like you can with Midjourney. But here's what I did. I said, create an Alfred P. Newman with a thought bubble, "What me worry about AI?" And so its answer was, "Sorry, but I cannot create or reference copyrighted characters or intellectual property, such as Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine. However, I can create an image of a generic character with a thought bubble saying, 'What me worry about AI, would that work for you?'" And I said, "Yes. Can you make it a nerdy person dressed like Newman?" And so it tried, and it failed miserably. It just was a weird looking image of, it kind of looked like a 1950s image of a clown like figure. It's not very good. It would have worked, especially if I'd made fun of it, right, as an AI generated image. So I tried something. I then said, "Hey, I just looked it up, and Alfred E. Newman's no longer covered under copyright. Can you regenerate the image like that then, like I asked earlier?" And it says, "I'm sorry for the oversight. Let me create the image per your original request." And it created a beautiful Alfred E. Newman image that said, "What me worry about AI."
Wow.
And so I have these up on Twitter so you can see them. But, and I've tried this experiment other ways. It didn't quite work this way. But remember, you know, this is not a Google search, right? And even though there are strong rules that exist around this, the bottom line is that, you know, these are not just, you know, static, you know, logarithmic tools. They have a, I don't want to say humanity, but they have a fluidity to them that is way different than any of the you know, restrictions that might be put into place. So, yeah, pretty wild stuff, Dr. Fryer.
So I've been using ChatGPT, as I said, almost every day, using it weekly. Did not know this was in here. I was frustrated with Midjourney, haven't been paying for it, but I am paying for ChatGPT-4. There it is. You just click it right there, say Dolly. I said, make these images photorealistic. Wow. That's incredible. So I think this is going to push me over the edge. Last fall, I wanted to do a EdTech playdate around generative AI, and some things happened and that didn't actually come about. But the chance to play with these tools, of course, we could do something like that online as well. I've thought about that, doing like a Saturday morning thing. But okay, just amazing. I think keep it coming. What else are you playing with as far as AI tools?
By the way, we are going to do an AI play date at the University of Montana. We're attracting a member. So yeah, in fact, we even contacted Gene Majira to get the kit and stuff. So
I looked, I watched part of that show that we did with her.
Yeah.
We did, it was like a STEM seeds with her, I think.
Yeah.
That was, wow, what a blast from the past. I was wearing my Buddy Holly glasses back then.
So let me tell you about another one. If you spend any time on TikTok, and you are on kind of educational TikTok, there's a lot of ads for plugins that will, you know, basically advertised as take your quizzes for you or do your homework for you. And those work, right? Well, I'm sorry, they very basically work. But like, for example, one of them has you go create an API key for ChatGPT, and then, but it's locked to like 7 different sites. For example, one of them is LinkedIn quizzes, right? Well, if I want to use that on my learning management system, you know, there's no way to do that. So after about maybe 6 minutes of Googling today, I found a pretty interesting tool set that's called College Tools. It's at collegetools.io. And it is for lack of a better way of putting it, a click to answer engine, right? So you install it, you get 3 questions for free a month, or you can pay $9 or $9.99 a month or $49 for a full year for unlimited questions. And it just sitting up in your Chrome browser when you're on Blackboard or Canvas or Moodle or any of the textbook light LMSs. And all you have to do if you're in a multiple choice question is to select the text, right click, and then I believe it says, yep, ask College Tools. Or if like copying and pasting isn't allowed, which is sometimes a browser feature when it's in a safe or secure mode, it will allow you to simply take a screenshot of that, although it is guaranteed of being able to analyze that goes down just ever so slightly, and it tells you the answer to the multiple choice question. So, again, I do not have problems with multiple choice questions, right? Like, a lot of people hate on objective testing. I think there's a really important value to objective testing for a lot of scenarios. But if you're using it as a final summative assessment or something that generates a score, that is no longer necessary, or I mean, it's no longer effective in a world where a plugin and $9.99 a month gets you past doing that. And, you know, we've had a lot of attempts at so-called secure browsers or other tools that disallow those pieces, but this tool seems pretty effective. And I've seen some coverage of this in LinkedIn. And one of the examples of, you know, what people say is that the whole idea of the, you know, 400 student survey class online, you know, where you're giving out mostly objective assessments, just doesn't seem like a workable model anymore. So that's collegetools.ai, and it's completely wild.
Okay, much to my chagrin, we're 59 minutes in. Usually we go just a few minutes after. I am going to exceed or surpass all previous records and do 5 geeks of the week, but I'm going to go really quick.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
You want to do it? You want to do an article before that, or should we just push on?
No, let's do it. I mean, okay. There's a million things to talk about, but they'll be around. They'll be around
okay.
later.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go fast. Native iOS voice dictation, macOS. Have you done this, Jason? As far as using dictation features,
I have not spent the time to set it up.
But they have gotten so cool. good. Shout out to Travis White, who's our new colleague in our STEM department, we just had to do a whole lot of comments for students. And so Canvas, download the PDFs, open them up, Command T, hold down F5, and it's almost flawless as far as its text transcription. It's so good. And I've been waiting for Apple to get better, and Apple is. So yay, thank you, Apple. Google's SGE, I already mentioned that. It's just labs.google/SGE. And so you can do generative AI searching, and it's okay. It's not as impressive as what Jason was just talking about with Dolly and ChatGPT-4. Minecraft Mars Colony. Coders have created a couple different animation projects, both with Scratch. This is kind of for fun. And then we did one this week on creating a terrarium simulation, a greenhouse in Mars using Microsoft MakeCode, which is built into Minecraft education. And that's just very geeky and really cool. If you want my new background video I found, I love this. It's from ISS, and it's what does it feel like to fly over planet Earth, the fluid version. And I think it was maybe captured by Chris Hatfield. And then the last one is following in the footsteps of Dr. Neifer. I've made my own Google Doc called AI Tips and Tricks from Wes Fryer. You can get it at wfryer.me/tips. And I've got it pinned on my Twitter and as well as my Mastodon. And I've just, you know, I've been sharing these different things, but I think it's helpful to kind of bring them together in one place. And so, as I'm discovering them, the one from today. Have you seen gamma.app?
I think I've heard of it.
Okay. It's a fairly stunning creation tool for presentation, document, or slideshow. And what I've allowed or invited my students to do, not for a grade, just for fun, is I have a Google form, and they'll put in a topic and then an AI prompt that can be up to 100 words. And then it creates a website, and it's very stunning. And their whole thing is why would you start from scratch? And so this idea of being able to take an outline for a presentation or a article or something like that that you want to do, and then have AI generate this. And we're talking images, and you can license, free images, any images, commercial use. It's just a flexible, adaptable tool, not paying for that. But that has been, and shout out to, I think, Irby, I'm going to get his name right. Anyway, he is an educator down in Texas who had his links blocked when he was trying to share them in Instagram for some reason. And this is because Canada's blocking. Have we covered that? Canada blocking news links from Meta?
We have covered that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah, shout out for him, because he had seen this from a Adobe person, Adobe evangelist, who was giving a presentation down in Texas. And anyway, awesome. So I wrote a blog post about it too, generative AI tools. I didn't go fast enough because you have 2 minutes. Okay.
I have a really quick tool and then I'm done, Dr. Fryer. I just want to share that we mentioned the DuckDuckGo privacy browser for iOS before, which is an Android, which is a privacy browser that blocks cookies and stuff and tracking. I like to do it when I'm doing any kind of Google search that I don't want to come back and bite me, right? Like, so if I want to buy hiking boots and I buy hiking boots, I don't want to see ads about hiking boots for the rest of my natural life. And then, once in a while, you may be Googling a topic you don't want to follow you around from advertising. But DuckDuckGo is not just a search engine anymore, it's a browser. It's also on Windows and Mac. And so my number of browsers that are in my toolbar now is pretty significant. In fact, I'm just going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 browsers I have sitting in my in my tray on my Mac desktop at home. But it's a really solid browser. It blocks all tracking of your searches. You can press a button and delete the entire history, the entire cache, and it just disappears. And so for private browsing, I think it's a really good idea to have DuckDuckGo hanging out on your computer.
Do you know what it's built on? Is it built on the WebKit or Chrome, or what's it built on?
I believe it's built on Chromium, which I'm 80% sure of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been yet again an eye-opening evening of thinking about the tech news, but also in this case, exploring some AI tools. And wow, Dolly built right in. I'm just still not over that one. So, Jason, where can folks connect with you? And maybe most importantly, where can they get that lovely AI Google Doc that you're continuing to maintain?
Well, you could find me on the Twitters at Tech Savvy Teach, and I don't know. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. You need to search for Jason Neifer to get there. I'm doing most of my professional chit chatting on LinkedIn now, and I've also been able to find a lot of great thinkers and scholars on AI too there. But my version of what I'm calling the AI Brief for Educators is at my short link halfpint.link/AI brief is where I'm putting that information at. And you, sir?
I have a page on westfryer.com/after where I have different social media links, and I'm continuing to enjoy, our fractured information landscape. So I'm still on Twitter, but definitely Mastodon, Threads, Blue Sky, K-12 Leaders, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. Yeah, it's all there. Although you'll just find barbecue on TikTok. So if you're looking for other stuff, sorry. This has been the EdTech Situation Room. We are almost every week on Wednesday's show, coming to you live from Montana and North Carolina. We want to do a shout out to live viewers. Sometimes we've got a few folks here, sometimes we don't. But whether you're catching us live or after the fact, you are certainly able to see all of our archive shows, not only on Facebook, but also on YouTube. And we encourage you to visit our website, edtechsr.com, where you can find all of those links, including all of our show notes, subscribe to our Substack, which does not have any kind of fee basis at this point, but might in the future, because, surely we would just be able to quit our day jobs and, podcast with Substack. Probably not, but we appreciate you checking us out and encourage you to share some feedback, play with media, play with AI tools, and share your learning with others, because that's one of the great things we still get to do in this sort of fractured and confusing and polluted media landscape. There's a lot of great ideas and a lot of great people, and they're sharing those ideas, and you can still connect with them. So we hope that our show in some small way helps you do that. Have a good week, everybody.
Good night.